The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.
You're very welcome along to the Paddy Power Half Hour. It is the last weekend of Premier League games before the international break, and some key ones coming up this weekend as well, including a meeting of two of the top three. It's Brendan Rodgers going back to Anfield, and it is Liverpool against Leicester. Liverpool sitting top of the Premier League at the moment. And we'll see if Manchester United can finally get an away win. They haven't won away in 11 games. Bury, who aren't even a club anymore, have managed to do that more recently. It's time for us to have a look forward to this weekend's games. We're joined by Phil Egan and also by Enda Coll. Good afternoon to you, lads.
Hey, Will.
Looking forward to these, of course. Anyone who is gambling this weekend, if you want to be a responsible gambler, check out dunlewy.net. But we've got lots of interesting games before the break, lads. And Phil, I suppose, starting with Liverpool against Leicester, because that is a meeting of two teams inside the top four at the moment. It's you look at Liverpool, who are so good at home, but this is a potential banana skin, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose what adds to it is that Brendan Rodgers is back at Anfield for the first time as an opposing manager, and he's got a very good Leicester side. A lot of people feel that they can break into the top four this season, which seems strange to talk about a team that won the Premier League 3 years ago. Very different team now. They play in a different way, but actually I'm not sure if they're going to get the top four finish that people are tipping them for. And I was trying to think back to the title winning team and the current team. And the title-winning team, they were just so much more effective and efficient. They were defensively more solid. And obviously that's also, I suppose, it helped that the year they won it, the other teams around them weren't as strong, the likes of Liverpool and Manchester City. But can they win at Anfield? April 2017 was the last time Liverpool lost a Premier League game at Anfield. Big Sam brought Palace there, and Liverpool have changed their team since then. Like, Mo Salah wasn't even at the club. So Mo Salah's never lost a home game in the Premier League. And Leicester are certainly good enough to get a draw. And a draw would feel like it would be drop points for Liverpool, but it would annoy Jurgen Klopp to finish going into the international break dropping points, because then when they come back, they've got Manchester United at Old Trafford. Plus, it's a chance for Liverpool to go 8 points clear of City, who play on Sunday. Now, City are going to beat Wolves. But these are just important little things, just keep the winning run going. But if Jamie Vardy and co were watching on Wednesday night, they'd be rubbing their hands, licking their lips, thinking we can get at Liverpool.
What do you think, Enda? We almost had Istan Red Bull during the week with Salzburg's comeback when they were 3-0 down. We saw some defensive culpabilities in terms of the way that Liverpool were playing, particularly in the second half. Does that give Leicester hope ahead of this weekend?
Well, it just depends if Matip's back, because I think we saw last year and with the partnership of Joe Gomez and Van Dijk, with Alexander-Arnold playing on the right-hand side, like that's a defence that you can actually get at, and that's where a lot of the teams got at Liverpool last season when Joe Gomez was a key starter for Liverpool. But if Matip's back for them, then it's going to be a little bit more difficult for Leicester. I would actually disagree with what Phil was saying about the Leicester title winning side. I think this Leicester side is a better team, but overall, I think it's a stronger squad than that Leicester side that won the league, because
that Leicester side, because they had no European football, went one game a week and they picked the same 11.
They had the same players,
same 11,
the whole time,
and
they had
very
individual
few
superstars like Mahrez, Kante, and Jamie Vardy was knocking.
Where's Morgan?
Danny Drinkwater in midfield.
Where's Morgan lifted the Premier League title, lads?
Whereas this Leicester side, I feel, as a squad, is overall it's stronger with more individual players that can play as part of a system that Brendan Rodgers likes to play. Like Youri Tielemans, I was watching him against Newcastle the last day. He was absolutely phenomenal. He's probably one of the best centre midfielders in the Premier League at the minute. Mm. So the midfield is probably where it's going to be won or lost, with that battle between, Henderson. He's not that dynamic. Can that Leicester side get at them? I'm not sure if James Maddison's going to return for
the... He is available, yeah.
Everyone thought they were going to struggle last week without James Maddison. They showed that they can do it without him, but he's definitely a bonus to have in the team.
I'd imagine Maddison as well, lads. He's the type of player you want in a game like this if he's going to unlock a defence, because I know you'll see maybe like the Chelsea game earlier this season where he gave the ball away a bit, but still he was crucial in terms of creating chances in that game at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, but see, you can't read anything into what happened last week. Leicester were playing Newcastle. Newcastle were down to 10 men. It was fill your boots. And it's so much space and time in the ball. They're not going to get any time and space in the ball tomorrow at Anfield, especially in midfield. I don't know what midfield Klopp will go with. He obviously, it seems as strong, he kind of is now leaning towards Fabinho, Henderson and Wijnaldum as his three. Naby Keita got a bit of game time the other night. I don't know if he's ready to start. He played in the League Cup as well. But they're not going to get opportunities. Where Leicester have a chance is if Robertson and Alexander, when Robertson and Alexander-Arnold push on, if Leicester get the ball, they've got space in behind. Also as well, Adrian is a liability sometimes with the ball at his feet. Got closed down, nearly conceded against Salzburg. Obviously, we know what happened at Southampton with Danny Ings. Jamie Vardy, every time Adrian gets the ball, Jamie Vardy is going to hunt him down. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a goal that results from an Adrian mistake because Vardy closes down, or he goes very close because that's what Vardy brings you. But I just think Liverpool's front three are going to test that Leicester defence, which I am not convinced by. Söyüncü has come in for Harry Maguire. You know, he's a bit of a fan favourite at the moment, but he's got a mistake in him. I think where they're very strong is their fullbacks. I would argue that obviously Robertson and Alexander-Arnold are the best set of fullbacks in the Premier League. I think he could nearly say Ricardo and Ben Chilwell are the second best.
Yeah, they're very good getting forward.
Yeah,
Ricardo got a nice goal at the weekend as well. Yeah.
Again, scored against Spurs as well.
It was a lovely finish It was almost like a winger's goal rather than a defender's goal. And one part I actually think that might be interesting in this game is from set pieces, because James Maddison, we know what he can do from set pieces, and Liverpool have been cynically fouling throughout the season. Not in a bad way, in a good way, in a way that title-winning sides do, like Man City did last year. That's what Liverpool have been doing this year in midfield. But if they give away silly free kicks at the edge of the box with Adrian and goals and James Maddison on the free kick, they're in danger from that.
That's actually where they scored from last season as well in the corresponding fixture. It was from a set piece and Liverpool playing the high line. But Liverpool's high line is more effective now because of VAR. They can push out, and if someone goes in behind them, if it's marginal, VAR will still award it against the attacking teams. So Liverpool have definitely pushed up. They're able to squeeze teams in. This is going to be a really good test. Tomorrow at 5 o'clock, we'll know a lot more about Leicester. We know all about Liverpool, but we'll know exactly how good Leicester are. Are they good enough to finish in the top four? You could argue the teams that they're up against, like they obviously lost to United, but the likes of United, Arsenal, Spurs, Chelsea all have deficiencies. So they deserve to be in the conversation, but I'm just not sure if they can see it out.
And just when I think about the goal-scoring market when it comes to this game, Cesc Fabregas was saying midweek he thinks Sadio Mane is probably in the top three players in world football at the moment, and probably has been for quite a while as well. I think if you're having a go on a goal scorer this weekend, Mane is in ridiculous form.
Well, we actually spoke about it on this show last week as well, how good he is, whether he's more important
than
Mo
Salah. And then he had a shocker.
But I think he is. I think he's as important, if not more important, than Mo Salah to this Liverpool side. And just the link-up play between those Liverpool forwards, it's a thing of beauty. The first goal they got during the week against Salzburg, the little 1-2 with Firmino, it was absolutely gorgeous. So if they can get that link-up play going, and it's not even just the forwards, there's now Andy Robertson getting on a ball at the in the middle of the six-yard box as if he's a striker. Like, they're just coming at teams from all angles. So like Phil said, it's going to be a real test for this Leicester
defense. Just have to be honest from the start, Liverpool, because, you know, they're coming off that great win against Salzburg where, you know, questions were asked and they had the answers. And that's what they've got now under Jurgen Klopp. They've got resilience, because when it went 3-0, when Haaland equalises for Salzburg, everyone's probably thinking Salzburg have this.
This could collapse, momentum's gone their way.
Liverpool actually saw out the game quite well. One thing that would be a little bit of a concern, regardless of conceding the three goals, Liverpool, at times, I noticed it last week at Bramall Lane, they're just giving the ball away too much in attack. They're trying to be too precise. Salah is the most guilty of the three of giving the ball away. And we said it last week, that's why I think if you could only have two of the front three, I'd always go with Mane as number one, then Firmino, and then Salah. I think Salah is actually the most replaceable of the three. I know it sounds bizarre given how many goals he's scored, but they just need to be a bit more careful with the ball at times, because obviously when they lose it, then they commit men forward and they can be done on the counter-attack. And Leicester would, that would suit Leicester.
It would be great to see Brendan Rodgers get a result at Anfield, though. Just for the sake of it, for the sake of narrative. We love narratives in football.
Well, a result, a result is a draw. That's a good result for Leicester.
But
not for Enda.
No, not for me. I want him to get a win. I want him to be the first manager in 2.5 years to beat Liverpool at Anfield, because in the league, that is. Because I think he's been unfairly treated by Liverpool fans. I never understood the hostility behind Liverpool fans and Brendan Rodgers. He took them to a title race that they didn't deserve to be in the first place. And people say, yeah, it was all Suarez. But you have to allow Suarez to do that. Like, and I think he's proven over the last 2 years. I know you can say whatever you want about Celtic, but he went to Scotland,
he's come again to Leicester,
and he's shown clear progress at Leicester, who finished ninth the last two seasons. So he's clearly a great coach. So I would love to see him just fans this weekend.
Yeah, I know you're drinking the Brendan Rodgers Kool-Aid there, but the thing is,
he's a great character, Phil.
He's a great character. He's an outstanding individual.
his own words.
Like, there's no doubt he's a talented coach. Take that season, 2013-14 season aside, because in my eyes, that was a freak season for that Liverpool squad. They were bang average, but that attacking three, and even with Coutinho, you had Suarez, Sturridge, Sterling, and then you had Coutinho. They were so bad at the back. Mm-hmm. They had a poor goalkeeper as well. So as soon as Suarez left, it all just fell. Like, it was basically, the foundations were built on quicksand. As soon as Suarez left, it was all over. And like, don't forget, he lost 6-1 away to Stoke on the final day of the following season. And I think then they should have just said, look, it's not working. Now, he got a few games before Klopp was available in 2015, and Klopp has just completely transformed them. They're more resilient now. And I think there's traits of that in the Leicester team, and that's why I'm interested to see how they get on tomorrow at Anfield. Like, it's an afternoon game, so the atmosphere probably won't be great, but if Liverpool have an intense spell like they had against Salzburg the other night in the first half, Leicester could be in serious trouble.
Yeah, very rare 3 p.m. kickoff time for Liverpool on a Saturday as well. Switching our attention then, lads, to the first game of the weekend, because Phil, Tottenham have just been in awful form.
Yeah.
But like, probably the low point of the last month or so where they've been in bad form was obviously that hammering they took from Munich midweek. Yeah. Difficult to bounce back from that.
Yeah, and I thought they turned a corner with the win last week against Southampton. And you know, they obviously lost Aurier, who's suspended now for tomorrow's game. And you kind of thought, right, if they get a result against Bayern, the season could start. And starts well when Son scored. And then it's just that the real concern would be the way and Pochettino said it himself, he felt that they gave up a little in the last 10 minutes. Mm. And that has to be a worry. But this probably shouldn't come as a surprise, given the fact that you've got three of the back four, two lads, Vertonghen and Alderweireld, who are out of contract soon, haven't agreed new deals. Danny Rose wanted out. You've no, like, Aurier, again, looked like a player they were going to offload. So he's suspended. You've got Kyle Walker-Peters, who, despite two-thirds of his name, he's not as good as Kyle Walker. He's not as good as Kieran Trippier. This is what happens. They've been moving players on. They've tried to bring in players. And Dembele, you know, he's settling in. He's had a few knocks. Lo Celso, we haven't seen. Sessegnon, these two lads are out. He's trying to change things. It hasn't worked. And Harry Kane has scored goals this season. He scored the winner last week. But I'm just wondering what effect the Champions League final has had on this squad in terms of the big call Pochettino had to make that night in Madrid. He got it wrong. Lucas Moura should have started that instead of Harry Kane. I get it, Harry Kane's the captain. It's hard to drop him. He's your main striker. But I wonder what effect that had on the rest of the players, where they looked at the guy who got a hat-trick in the semi-final second leg against Ajax and they thought, he can't even get into the team. Like, we need him. And there's just, Pochettino's been saying all the wrong things at the start of this season. The players, the body, like Christian Eriksen doesn't want to be there. Saying that, they have enough talent that they could still finish comfortably in the top four. But if they were to drop points tomorrow, then it's more and more questions. They've another couple of weeks to wait for their next game, and I know they've got a game against Liverpool coming up soon enough as well. So it's not good. And they got into the new stadium, and that was meant to be the big project. They're in there now, and you're looking for them to kick on, but they look like they're regressing.
And the only thing about this is Brighton are very poor at home. Haven't won their last 8 Premier League games at home. I think they've only scored more than once in their last 11 at home as well. So they're not exactly the team who are likely to cause Spurs problems. Sorry, this is probably an ideal game to bounce back with.
Yeah, well, the Graham Potter revolution is working well, isn't it? This is what you get with a coach who's going to come in and change the fabric of your style of play. It happens continuously year on year in the Premier League when clubs get promoted and they stay in it for a few years, and the manager gets them there by practical means and keeps them there by practical means, gets the sack because the fans get fed up with his practical style of play, and they hire in someone who's going to come play football, and they get relegated next year. Mm. And this is exactly what's happened with Brighton. I actually predicted Graham Potter to be the first manager to get sacked. I'm surprised he hasn't got the sack yet. And it's just, they're open at the back, they're playing nice football, fair enough, but they're not scoring goals. So what good is this fancy football if you're not scoring goals? And they just don't have the quality anymore. They don't have the quality up front. You can't expect to get results by playing, and I know it's great to see Aaron Connolly getting into the team, but by playing youngsters up front by themselves when they don't have the physicality or don't have the know-how to go at these teams. Like, even a Tottenham defence that's on the rocks, I can't see Brighton where they're going to get their goals from this weekend.
Well, even a few weeks ago, Newcastle, who we saw how poorly they defended last week, played Brighton at home, and Brighton struggled to create too many chances in that game.
Yeah, Connolly was the closest, obviously, just millimetres away. It hasn't changed that much. There's a few little tweaks that have been made in terms of formation, but there's no way they're going to sack Graham Potter. Even if they were to lose the next 2 or 3 games, they're not going to sack him, because if you're going to try and change the way you play, you have to give a manager time. Now, when I say time, I'm talking maybe Christmas time, because there's so much money in the Premier League. This is where you have to be. Brighton have got a taste of it now, 2 seasons in it. This is their 3rd season. They want to stay in the top flight. So it would take something like a fairly desperate for Brighton to get rid of Graham Potter. But it's amazing when you have a reputation and, like, but if you actually strip it back, like, this is a guy that never managed in the Premier League, given a job, and I'm all for lads being given an opportunity. So I think it's one that maybe in a few weeks we'll be able to revisit, but there's a lot of work to be done, and goals are going to be their problem, and they're still relying on Glenn Murray.
This has Big Sam coming to the rescue in December.
Nah, Big Sam is
done, isn't he?
I think he's done. I think the speed dial of Big Sam,
Harry Redknapp,
David Moyes, Alan Pardew, Tony Pulis, I think they've been taken off the speed dial.
Don't know.
No?
Well, we thought that about Steve Bruce.
That is true. That must have been,
maybe temporarily taken off speed dial, but they still have the digits there.
Yeah, that's true. You've got you've got a card on one of the magnets, fridge magnets, and you still have some of their numbers, but I would have thought people are trying to move on from that.
Well, look, if people think Spurs are going to kick back this weekend, What Odds Paddy is here to try and help you, because Tottenham to score first in each half, 4-1. Now, that does assume, Phil, that Spurs are going to score a few goals in the game and are going to do it across each half, but I can see Spurs scoring goals here.
Yeah, they've been scoring goals in the Premier League. They just haven't been able to keep them out. And it doesn't help if Hugo Lloris try and Cruyff turns inside the penalty area, but they should have enough. And I'm trying to think of positives from the Munich game. Heung-min Son was very good, scored a good goal, had a few chances. Real worry though, Dele Alli has his form has just fallen off
the cliff. Yeah.
Like, now I know he's been injured. I'm starting to now think back to when he was at his best. He still had games where he would not disappear, but he would be quiet enough, but he'd come up with big moments. So, like, big moments when I can remember the Chelsea team that won the league under Conte. He scored 2 goals that night, Dele Alli, both identical. But that's what I mean. He came up with big moments. So
the North London derby.
His all-round play
Yeah, he's completely, he's a shade of the player he was a few years ago, which is, it's not something you expect from a player with such talent at a young age. And it's difficult to point out where Dele Alli currently fits into the Tottenham system.
That's it, actually. Probably doesn't, because Heung-Min takes up a lot of the places that he wants to be.
Now that they're
on the pitch,
finally playing a three-man forward line with Heung-Min Son up front with him, he no longer can play that central role off Harry Kane, so that's probably one of the issues, isn't it?
Yeah, do you play him deeper? But then they have Harry Winks there.
Mm. Well, I personally think he's better than Harry Winks. He's the most forgettable player in the Premier League.
Harry, he's neat and tidy, but I think he thought he was playing a training match the other night against Munich. He got caught in the ball so many times. But a lot of these players, their reputations are enhanced because they get capped for England, and you know there's a bit of a love in for them. But like Harry Winks he's a decent player, but would he get into any team that's trying to win a Premier League? No.
Yeah, I do wonder if Spurs might change and go back to 3-5-2 at some point this season as well, and play Son and Kane together up front to get him more central.
Yeah, like where does Lucas Moura come into that?
The bench.
Like every time you see him, he causes panic in opposition defences. I just think if he wants to use him as an impact player, I don't know what he's going to do with Lo Celso when he eventually gets fit. He can play in a deeper role. But
can't help but think he was brought in with the idea that Eriksen was going to be gone.
Yeah, and Eriksen just doesn't look interested.
There's one thing that John Giles was saying during the week that, and it's a really old-fashioned way of looking at football, and sometimes you can maybe push that aside, but it's very true in this sense that there's so many risks in this Tottenham team that none of them seem to be. It doesn't seem like a team anymore. Like if you look at the team, the amount of players that wanted out, or want out, or are out of contract, including the manager, why would they bother trying to play for the team? What John was saying was that when he was at Leeds, every single player were playing as if they were there forever, as if Leeds were the be-all and end-all of their lives. Can't say that about a single Tottenham player at the moment.
But this was always going to happen, because the wage structure, they don't pay the wages. Yeah. So, you know, if you're, say, Toby Alderweireld, you're a Belgian international, you're away on international duty, you're all there having the crack, and
there's a guy on three times or four times your wage.
And you're kind of going, I'm better than this guy. Why is he getting? And look, footballers have a short space to earn a lot of cash. Now they earn so much cash that they don't, if they manage it properly, they don't have to worry about it for the rest of their lives. But you know, Toby Alderweireld, I'm just picking him as an example. There he is putting in decent performances for Spurs most weeks, and they're not winning anything either. So what is to keep them there? Very little.
You do get the feeling Madrid was maybe the end of this particular Tottenham team. Yeah. It's just kind of a hangover into this season. Look at our commentary games on Off the Ball this weekend. Then we've got two live games. Southampton against Chelsea is going to be Alan McLaughlin, the Irish hero of 1993, sending us to the World Cup in 94, joining Stephen Doyle. And we've got Newcastle against Manchester United with David Myler joining Nathan Murphy for that one. Starting with Southampton against Chelsea, guys. Chelsea for you, Phil. They've been kind of a little bit up and down, but Tammy Abraham, who we spoke about a few weeks ago, is still scoring the goals for them, and he's in the England squad now as well.
Yeah, he's going to be in the England squad. This is a tough one. Southampton are, under Hasenhüttl, they'll always give you a good game. They've scored in their last 17 Premier League home matches, so they score goals at home. Mm. I think back to they drew at United. They obviously lost to Liverpool, but they certainly gave Liverpool a few problems in that game. So they're going to give Chelsea a lot to think about. Chelsea are still conceding goals, but they're at the moment they're scoring enough to get them the wins. Like that was a big win for them away to Lille, just to get them up and running in the Champions League, because that's a tough group for them. They've already lost to Valencia. Yeah, it looks like Ajax are winning that. Yeah. It looks like Ajax are winning that group. So, you know, Lampard has to, you know, he got his first home win last week in the Premier League, and the PR machine on Lampard is working overtime, but it only takes a few results to go against you, and then people start thinking, oh, is he the right man? But it's all going pretty well for him, considering that they don't have as many points as they should, but everyone's happy at Chelsea. Mm. This will all happen because of the transfer ban. If there was no transfer ban, then this wouldn't be deemed as the best of starts for the league. And let's be honest, Lampard wouldn't have got the job.
And the Pulisic situation's interesting at the moment. He seems to be really out of favour. It was a player that was signed before Frank Lampard came to the club. A lot of hype about him. He was going to be not necessarily a direct replacement for Eden Hazard, but he was going to take maybe some of the creative burden off the rest of the players in the team. Hasn't really hit the ground running yet, though.
No, not really. And it was a strange signing in the first place. It always seemed like he was going to be the replacement for Hazard, but he was never a like-for-like player, so it was never really going to work. I think the fact that Sarri wasn't last in the end of the season has been a big factor for him, because Lampard didn't bring this player in. It wasn't his choice. So he probably just doesn't fit into the way that Lampard's playing the game or wants to play the game. And if you look at the likes of Willian and Pedro, they're still in the above Pulisic in the pecking order. So when you come to a new club like that, it's a struggle. But there was also murmurings that, you know, Pulisic, he was a kind of a Pogba buy for Chelsea, that he was bought to expand their market into the US. So if that's the case, then it probably has worked. I saw a graph recently that Chelsea actually has a huge support in America. So maybe it's worked in a commercial way for Chelsea.
Get up early.
He's on the bench, though.
You can get up early on the West Coast to watch him sit on the bench. And exactly. He's not even making the bench.
Yeah, he didn't make the bench midweek. I kind of wonder as well, for Chelsea, they must be sickened to see Gonzalo Higuain playing really well under Sarri now at Juventus, and Conte's Inter, top of Serie A, and playing really good football at the moment as well. The last two managers they've lost.
Yeah, well, I thought that Sarri was harshly treated by Chelsea because he won the Europa League and he finished third. So what else do you want him to do? It shows the leeway.
Doesn't know the club as well as Frank Lampard.
No, he does not know the club. That's the problem. But it shows the leeway you get as a manager if you play expansive football, if you play exciting football. If you look at the difference between Lampard and Solskjaer at the minute, the difference in the tone at the club, the difference the way that the media is treating him, the difference the way that it's all doom and gloom over in Old Trafford, but it's all the young lads are starting to show their quality at Chelsea, even though the record isn't that much different from the start of the season to
and
now.
And they lost 4-0 to United.
Yeah.
That's some achievement.
So Lampard is getting a lot of leeway based on the style of football he's playing. And he will do until it goes horribly wrong and they continue to lose to the bigger sides, which I think they will. I think they'll be safe enough this weekend against Southampton, though.
Okay. We'll move on to Newcastle against Manchester United then, the battle of the Uniteds at St James's Park. Phil, Steve Bruce's Newcastle have really
been
struggling.
Oh my God, they're
last
awful.
Last weekend was awful. Is this the game that Manchester United finally get that away win and put that stat behind them?
Do you know what? You would think so, right? But I was thinking about this during the week, and if there's one game that will get the Newcastle players and crowd riled up and behind Steve Bruce, it's Manchester United. And they would love nothing more. They'll definitely fancy their chances of doing something against United. And you're in a situation where if Steve Bruce loses this game, like, I think we all accept the fact that Bruce probably won't see out the season. I still think Newcastle will stay up, though, because I don't know who they're going to bring in. Maybe Mike Ashley will go back. Someone like Alan Pardew, you just don't know what he's doing. Like, they need to get that club sold, so Mike Ashley no longer has any power there. But if United were to lose, and they haven't won in 10 away games, PSG in March was their last one. If they were to lose, you're starting to think, right, United's next game then after that is at home to Liverpool. If they were to lose that, as much as Solskjaer was a darling of the club, because he's no longer a darling, because unfortunately he's in a position where he's completely out of his depth, and club is a mess. I was watching them last night.
No shots on target,
and just like the only positives you could take from it was there was a few young lads got a bit more game time.
But they're not getting exposed to good football at the moment.
No, it's just so pedestrian. And like the game on Monday, the Arsenal-Man U game, was dreadful stuff. Like it has to be a real concern. You're starting to think now, how long do United have to wait before they can challenge for a title again? At the moment, they don't even look like they can challenge for top four.
No, I think they're really in a battle for sixth at the minute.
Yeah.
And I would have them well below Leicester.
Yeah.
In the sense of quality that they have in the squad, the sense of football that they're playing, the sense of identity that they have. Solskjaer, you know, He just looks at his depth. And it's not, I don't necessarily blame him for it, because he's been thrown into this position completely out of the blue, nobody expected, nobody knew that Solskjaer was going to get this job. I don't think Solskjaer even expected to get this job. And he's on his third management position. He's had to take the biggest club in the world in the worst state that they've ever been in and try to transform it over the course of the season. And it's not going to happen over the course of the season, but it doesn't look like he has the ability to turn it around.
I think we've had a Solskjaer narrative as well, Enda, where at the start it was, you're not getting results and playing good football. That was the first 10 or 11 games. He gets the job on a full-time basis. The results start to turn a little bit, but people say he's still playing more exciting football. After the Everton defeat, he says, I'm going to clear out this club. Most of the guys you saw today aren't going to even be here next season. We're bringing new players in. The summer was then a mixed bag. The signings that have come in seem to be doing okay, but there probably wasn't enough of a turnaround of players. And now this season, the narrative has very quickly turned to not getting results and also not playing good football.
Well, you really do need to look at the structure at United, though. And this is why Solskjaer is getting not a free run, but he's definitely getting a bit of leeway, is that Ed Woodward is just making these terrible, terrible decisions at the club. Like, they said they were going to clear them out. They only temporarily cleared them out and they didn't replace them.
And they're actually paying
Alexis Sanchez to play for Inter at the moment.
Yeah. He scored last weekend.
The club is all over the place. But, here's the kicker, and here's why Ed Woodward is never going to be thrust out of the club. They've had another year of record revenue. And that's all that matters at the minute at United. The football doesn't matter. The football is a sideshow to the business.
If you've got the noodle sponsors and you bring in the £700 million or so each year, they don't care.
They've got paint sponsors across Manchester. They don't care about the football. The Glazers don't care about the football. They don't care about the football club. And to be honest, it's just a sideshow. It doesn't matter to them. The only thing that matters about Solskjaer is whether or not they'll have to pay him off before the season's finished. That's the only thing that matters to the Glazers.
Time is going to catch up with us, so just to race around some of the rest of the fixtures this weekend and just get your views on them. Phil, Arsenal against Bournemouth. Arsenal, they're young guns, impressive again in the Europa League. They'll probably switch back up this weekend, though, you would think?
Yeah, more game time for Tierney, more game time for Hector Bellerin. So those two get fit, and then you can start throwing them into the conversation with good full-back pairings. Tierney, I would rate ahead of Bellerin. I mean, Bellerin, when he's got an explosive pace, but I still don't know.
Tierney's a bit more nice about it.
Yeah, Tierney's a proper defender as well. Yeah. But
he's back in the Premier League.
Is he?
He is. I said last week that he'd give him 6 months and he will be, but I'm hopping straight into that bandwagon.
It's a short 6 months.
But I think Arsenal will beat Bournemouth. Their home form is probably what will get them into the top four. But just every so often Unai Emery leaves me scratching my head because I'm thinking, what are you trying to do? They should have beaten United. They are good enough that they should have beaten United on Monday, but I think he got his team selection all wrong. If he wants to play Granit Xhaka every week, he's definitely going to make things a lot tougher for himself. Guendouzi and Torreira are just so much better in there.
Even Ceballos, if he's to play.
Yeah, Ceballos, you can play him there as well. Yeah,
Aubameyang probably gets them out of a lot of trouble at the moment. End of Man City against Wolves, can't see anything but a City win here, despite Wolves getting a great result last night.
Yeah, it's again another English side struggling with the European fixtures the first time that they're in it. City are phenomenal. Like last week, we saw it again. They just turn a switch and then that's it. They just have too much for these sides. Mahrez was absolutely brilliant for them last week again. And something really interesting that Damien Delaney pointed out during the week was how the City forwards are playing at the minute. He was saying that the four City forwards are basically marking the defenders. They're not playing in the pockets or not playing and trying to get in behind them. They're marking the four defenders, so it makes them really, really difficult for the defenders to actually do anything about them then. So I can't see this Wolves defence. It has struggled this year, being able to cope with the City defence. I would expect Aguero to come back in, along with Bernardo Silva as well. So I would say it's going to be an easy enough City win, to be honest.
It's a nice option to have, maybe David Silva due to come back into the team as well. Phil, the London derby between West Ham and Crystal Palace. West Ham obviously are very good at home this season, beat United in their last home game as well.
Yeah, a lot of people are starting to think West Ham could not get top four now, but definitely into the top six. Not so sure. At the back, they're going to struggle at times. They're scoring goals. Palace are that team where they seem to do their best stuff when they can counter-attack, so this might be a game to suit them.
Of course, our football coverage here with thanks to Paddy Power. We've got a couple of other offers to make for you this weekend, and we'll see if the guys can pick out any games where potentially this could happen. Plus three goals, plus three cards, and plus nine corners. Any of the fixtures stand out for you, Enda, there, where we could have a goal fest and a card fest as well?
A goal fest and a card fest. I'm probably looking towards Burnley and Everton then.
Okay.
Just because Burnley, Chris Wood, I expect him to cause a bit of havoc in that Everton defence. Everton haven't been great away from home. Going forward, can't expect much from Everton, but be a feisty encounter. Mm. Sean Dyche loves getting stuck into these soft boys, and of all the teams in the Premier League right now, the Everton midfield are probably the softest. So I would say that's your goal fest and card fest.
For you, Phil?
Goal fests: Arsenal, Bournemouth, City, Wolves, and Southampton, Chelsea. There's three goal fests for you. Burnley are going to eke out maybe a 1-0 against Everton.
Yeah, I think City Wolves might be a decent one because I think there's going to be goals. I think Wolves will get booked trying to stop City, and then City are going to get a lot of corners because of the shots they're going to have on target as well. And our other What Adds Paddy bet that we have for this weekend: each team to have one card in each half. Is there anywhere where discipline? I know, Andy, you're going for Burnley Everton. Anywhere else that jumps out for you, Phil, on those fixtures where there could be cards and plenty of them?
I would think Arsenal Bournemouth is one. I think you're going to see, I wouldn't be surprised if you see a red card at the Etihad. Wouldn't be surprised to see Wolves get reduced to 10 men in that one. And I'm trying to think of just the customary yellow card.
Granit Xhaka,
Arsenal Bournemouth. And there'll definitely be a few yellow cards, Burnley Everton.
Okay, well, that's a lot for this week on the Paddy Power Half Hour. Best of luck if you are having a punt over the weekend. Just to remind you again, our live commentary games here on Off the Ball: Southampton against Chelsea on Sunday afternoon. Stephen Doyle is going to be joined by Alan McLaughlin, the hero of Windsor Park. And then after that, we've got live coverage of Newcastle United against Manchester United. That one's at St James's Park. And David Myler is going to be on commentary on that one with Nathan Murphy. We'll speak to you again next weekend.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, the greatest football partnership since Jeff and Heskey.